Welcome to edition 30 of the All Killer No Filler podcast with me, Rachel Fairburn, and Kerry Pritchard-McLean. Just before we begin, we'll do our usual disclaimer. This isn't hero worship. We do this podcast because we have a mutual interest in serial killers. And as long as we are doing this podcast, it stops us from writing to them in prison.
Episode 30. Part 1,
Dirty
A.
30.
Dirty 30. Is it, what are we going to do? Part 1, A. Do you know what? I hate it when flat... Oh, here we go. I hate it when flat it's like flat 1A or whatever. I really, you know, when it was a house, because I've got this weird mix of like socialist and conservative. So I'm like, well, what's the point of taking a nice big house and chopping it up when there's so many unused one-ups, one-downs that people could have themselves? So it's a weird mix of like... There's more social housing than we're like, we don't need to chop up big houses.
I don't like it when people rename the house that's number 13, 12A. Grow up, mate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I thought you were going to say something else, which, God love her, my auntie, who I absolutely adore, she's number 34, but she's given her house a name.
Oh.
Which is, I mean, she's not this, but historically it's quite new money, isn't it? I'd say it's her, it was her... It's my late uncle who had renamed it Hemblas, which is the house he was born in that the family farm was on. And so they're number 34, but it's technically Hemblas number 34.
Oh, right, okay.
That's... Yeah, it's a bit Jack and Vera Duckworth, isn't
it? Is it? A bit, yeah.
Oh, God, if you're American, you're going to have no fucking idea what that is. I don't even know how you explain Jack and Vera.
It's me. Vera Duckworth's me, but old. With more leopard print.
Yeah.
Google Jack and Vera Duckworth.
Yeah, they're sort of... It's a really long-running soap called Coronation Street. And there were a couple in it who were sort of a comical kind of northern couple. God, if you've not seen Coronation Street, you're really missing out. What else do you need to know? Emily, is she dead yet?
No, she's still
born. Oh, my God. So there's a woman who's been in it about 1,000 years and is easily 162?
Oh, she's bobbing on.
Yeah. She looks like she's been, like, she should be, she sleeps in bandages.
Yeah.
And every now and then she'll pop up and you'll be like, bloody hell, Emily's made it another cold winter.
She's in Peru at the moment with a nephew, Spider.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's the storyline?
That's the storyline.
And she survived a serial killer. And then there's Ken Barlow, who's like, so he's been in, he's the longest serving one.
Yeah, he's been in it for, like, since it started.
Since it started, and he was like the young heartthrob, but now he's just sort of an old man who looks a bit like Alan Partridge. And so, you know, like, kind of got V-neck golf jumpers on, and he's had loads of wives. But in real life, apparently there was a thing in the Sun that he's slept with more than 3,000 women.
Yeah. And not one of them's come forward.
It's like Fred West.
Yeah, he's like, shh, we won't mention that again. But interestingly enough, talking of houses, this is the House of Horrors.
Yes, Fred and Rose West, Gloucester House of Horrors. Also known as, tipped me off about this one, I love this one, the Garden of Evil.
It's rubbish.
Oh, what?
Garden of Evil.
I think that's a good tabloid thing.
That was the initial tabloid headline.
I was convinced when we were chatting earlier that they're also known as the patio murderers. Oh, the patio murders. And you think that's a load of shite.
I think that's nonsense.
You think that's Brookside. Brookside copied this, didn't they?
Brookside was before this.
Oh, fucking hell, right. If you're listening in somewhere that isn't the UK, Brookside is a terrible soap, like really low budget, set in Liverpool.
I used to really enjoy it. It was my favourite Brookside.
And there was a murder there, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And they were buried under the patio.
Yeah.
And this was
before this.
Really?
Yeah, and as we will get along, Fred West apparently used to watch that.
Brookie.
And... That whilst this was going on, he wasn't inspired by it, but he was doing the same thing.
That's fascinating.
Yeah,
it's also Brookside is most famous for having the our country's first on-screen lesbian kiss.
Yes,
it Anna made, Friel
it made the career of Anna Friel. That
yeah,
I
it
think.
Did, yeah. Didn't it?
Don't know what happened to the other last.
There's always casualties in love and war, and there.
Well, she probably did go on to Casualty. That's probably what's happened.
Oh, God, Casualty is the worst thing ever. There's just so much bad telly we're letting you know about. I'm sure it was the patio murders. Is patio British as well? I feel like patios don't exist outside of
It's a word
Britain.
That I've never heard used anywhere else. And it's a word that I've only ever heard used in the... Well, next door I've got a new patio.
Yeah. Although it's been sort of decommissioned since decking came in.
Yeah. But decking's so slippy though, isn't it?
Decking is so... Like, it's so weird that, like, this outside... Basically, garden flooring goes in waves of fashions. Crazy paving at first. And then it was patios. And then it was decking, which is fucking lethal if it's wet.
It's nightmare. Wood. It's an absolute nightmare. If you are in Manchester, and say one evening you go to the Comedy Store on Deansgate Locks, if it's raining, you will just see people, excuse the pun, hitting the deck outside because it's that slippery.
Really?
I've done it myself, if I'm honest. But yeah, people just slip in and banging their heads. And there's a thing that says, please be careful, the decking is slipping. Change it.
Yeah, just put something down on it. So let us know, is patio British?
Yeah.
I feel like it is. I don't think I've heard it. I know it sounds like a French word, but I don't imagine the French would be like, I just put the patio down. No. There's too uncool.
I think it's probably a French word that people like Jack and Vera Duckworth, working class snobs, like myself, have probably taken for themselves to describe the backyard.
Yeah. So it's basically flagstone, paving stones, where you get a nice bit of grass and then you cover it with a horrible bit of pink, usually, paving stone. So, also we should tell you about this. We'll put this picture on our new Facebook group, which we've got, which, I mean, I think it's going to last 2 months before someone gets weird and we bin it off, but
I have faith in the EU people, that you're not going to go weird.
They are good, aren't they?
Yeah. And if you do, you're off. That's it.
Yeah, you think Rachel's got no tolerance when it comes to various things. You want to see if someone kicks off on our Facebook
absolutely
group being
no.
weird.
I have a very low tolerance threshold. You don't even get 3 strikes. You get half a strike and you're out. That's it.
So Rachel prints out a load of information before we run through all the research that we've got. And for some reason, with this episode, has printed everything out huge in big writing like she's got failing eyesight. So there's an A4 sheet with just Fred West's face on it. And she did this at work.
I just was like, well, I thought I'm going to have to do this, right, in my job that I have to make things work out. And
to pay for this fucking podcast.
And I printed it out and I was like, I was doing a photocopy. I was like, oh shit. Massive picture of Fred West's face. And I thought, and all the letters have come out big. And I thought, I can't go back and do it again because someone's going to come in and be like, what are you doing? It's weird.
It is weird. And you didn't bring it up. I had to bring it up. I was like, why is there a huge picture of his face? And you were like, and I was like, oh.
I wasn't going to frame it.
Yeah, it's not getting laminated. So.
We'll show you the pictures of those on there.
We'll show you the pictures on there so you can see how fucking bizarre Rachel looks to her co-workers. So they say it's 12 murders.
Yeah, there's definitely more.
Categorically more.
Yeah, so this is 12 murders committed between 1967 and 1987. The majority were committed between Fred and Rose at their house, 25 Cromwell Street in Gloucester, which there's, from when we go on and what you'll hear about, I 100% think there is definitely more. They actually think he committed more murders and a lot of his victims are buried under where they built the M5 in Gloucester. So there's no way they can ever go back and have a look.
Maybe my favourite service is on the M5. It's Gloucester Services. And it's a sister service station. When you're a comedian, you have favourite services.
Yeah. mine's Weatherby.
Weatherby's really good. Yeah. Well, that's the... Weatherby. No, yeah, Weatherby's great. It's got Dyson Airblades in the toilets.
Yes.
And it's got a Marksies. And it's got a Burger King.
And it looks like a spaceship.
Yeah, no, it's really good.
So on the approach, you're like, finally!
Yeah.
A Ginster's buffet bar. I like it.
Weatherby's, I'd say, number 3 for me. T-Bay is at the top because it's got ducks. And that's the sister company of Gloucester Services. So, and it's like amazing. They have these sausage rolls there because it's like a farm shop, but a services. And is services the same in America?
Gas stop, or
I'm probably sounding like something from the 20s saying this.
I don't really know. I should know because I've been into.
They must have them because it's such a vast country.
Rest stop.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Rest stop.
So it's my favourite services, and they have these sausage rolls. They're so fucking good. Cumberland sausage rolls, but the sausage inside them is the size of a perfect dick. It's so... And that's all I think about while I'm eating it. It's like, nom, 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 perfect dick. But it's so good.
She likes her penises seasoned.
Yeah, I like it from Cumberland. but it's so delicious and so like meaty. It almost fights back. It's fucking great. So I'm wondering, but now I'm worried that like these pigs are grazing on a farm that's above a fucking burial site for Fred and Rose, which has put me off slightly. I'm going to go back to the prawn mayo sandwich.
I once saw Clive Anderson at T-Bay Services on the way to the Edinburgh Festival.
Really?
Yeah. But it was weird because I just thought, oh, there's Clive Anderson. Just carried on what I was doing.
I suppose, yeah, even Clive Anderson's got to get petrol.
Exactly.
Do you know what I found out the other day? I was comparing a night. It's all female comedy night, and that tends to mean that you're badly paid, although not in this instance. There's quite a lot of gay women in. Mm-hmm. And I was chatting to one, Sarah. She drives a bus. Of course she fucking does. And I was saying, what's the best thing about being a bus driver? And she said, probably the 1p meals, like everyone knew. And I was like, what's this? And apparently, if you're a bus driver... Oh, my God, I can't believe we've not even started the murders yet. Sorry about this. If you're a bus driver and you pull into, I think it's any road chef services, which are all right. Mm-hmm. They're the ones with the KFC. You can get a meal for a penny.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing, isn't it?
It's brilliant.
And I was like, what kinds of meals? She's like, KFC, Harry Ramsden's like, KFC? No wonder so many serial killers fucking drive long distance. They're getting their penny meal and they're getting to... bashing the skull of a sex worker in a deserted car park in fucking Cherwell Valley.
Well, my dad is a long-distance coach driver, and he has told me about a voucher system that exists. But if I divulge it, he will kill me, right? This is like...
Oh, is this top secret?
Yeah, I can tell you about it, but these vouchers, you could tell when he told me about them. He wasn't happy about me knowing.
Oh, really?
So I can never tell everyone else, but it's a good deal.
Yeah, just I mean, you told me, and then you were like, "I'm going to keep it off the podcast as a sign of respect."
Yeah, I can't let it out there. But we must get on with Fred and Rose.
Is your Sorry about this. Sorry about all the waffle. We'll probably cut half this out. Do you know what though? I can tell how tired I fucking Kiri crack on. I can tell how tired I am when I've edited a podcast by how many yawns I leave in and how many. We've got to cut that. I leave in that I'm obviously tired and I'm half asleep trying to edit it.
Well, I was just saying to you, I would really like to do a podcast in the next couple of months where I don't sound like Marge Simpson because my voice has got progressively more like deeper over the past 3 months. Because I've had, like, a throat infection. And then because I've been gigging loads and talking.
I think it'd be quite nice. It's like when you watch, you know, that bit of, is it 2 and a Half Men? Where they go, men. Oh, yeah. And then he grows up and then goes like, ooh. Oh, God. That's what you're like.
Have I hit puberty?
Yeah, yeah, you finally hit puberty.
Can't wait.
Fred and Rose are one of your faves, aren't they?
They are. They're one of the ones I'm most interested in. I've read a lot about them, and I've reread things about them, I've watched lots of documentaries about them, and I just find them absolutely fascinating. It goes back to when I was at school, actually. I wrote an article about this recently, shared it on the Twitter. When I was in top year of junior school, primary school, whatever you want to call it, probably about 10, maybe, we had to write a diary of the week's events, and the teacher chose a news story. And the news story that she chose this week was that the particular week was this, these murders.
And we fucking, had to, like, things were different in the 90s, weren't they?
In fact, I've been looking for it because I've still got all my old school books. I've not been able to find it yet, so when I do find it, I will tweet it for you all. Because I drew a picture as well. What was wrong with me?
What did you draw a picture of?
Just the house. I know. What is wrong?
I think that's crazy irresponsible of her to do.
It's weird, isn't it? But it sparked an interest. And as well, I've got a book from when I was in first year, probably, of primary, junior school, whatever. And it's about the Berlin Wall coming down. So it's all things like, yes, at the weekend, Germany, blah, blah, the Berlin Wall, kind of that. And families were put back together and that. On Saturday, we had chips. that's the most important thing there. That's the most important. But it is one of my favourites, and it is one of the most interesting, because it's completely bizarre. And there's just so much that went on over a period of 20 years or whatever. It's just, even the childhoods are mad.
Yeah.
Which we'll come to now.
Now, you know how we think there's no more murders? I kind of have vague proof of this. It's weird how many people, when they find out you do a podcast, have got stories that relate to serial killers. Now, a very famous comedian, I'm not going to say who because it'll sound like I'm name-dropping.
Clang!
Yeah, well, that's... It's more of a clang, as we go. A very famous comedian that I can't name. Also, they're not the kind of person who'd want to be named.
A very close personal friend of mine.
A close personal friend was on the phone to me. I met them at a gig and we were chatting about various things. He also huge Sonic Youth fan. And I told them about the cover was Maureen and David from the... And he loved that fact from Ian... from Myra Hindbury. Anyway, he was saying that his sister-in-law lived around that area. And in fact, I've just realised who his sister-in-law is because we were talking about who his wife is.
All right.
And you were saying she's from around there. So his sister-in-law used to say, said sort of like casually at Christmas, oh, I remember when Fred tried to get me in his van. And he was like, what? And he was like, oh, yeah, we
pass
all
the
used...
cranberry sauce.
Yeah. Is there any more stuffing? And apparently that was a common thing of girls around that area at that time were like, don't get in Fred's van. He used to drive around trying to pick women up. So if how many women did get in? And what's really sad about so many of these, like so many of the people we talk about, is the women that go missing, no one ever reports them, really. Yeah. So there's plenty of... It just makes you realise, doing stuff like this, how many people are disconnected from family or friends, and then that means that they're incredibly vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because if you're not in regular contact with people and you go missing, who the fuck is going to tell people?
And sort of decades go by, and people just think, especially the way people communicated in those days was a lot different than it is now. It's not like someone to check on a Facebook to see what someone's up to. Obviously, it would be, you'd be waiting for a phone call that someone would make from a payphone. And it's just like, they'd go, oh, Susan, oh, we just thought she'd gone off to live in Ireland.
Yeah, she always said she wanted to live in Spain
or whatever. Yeah, so we assume that she'd just gone.
Yeah, so that's it.
Really peculiar, isn't it?
Yeah. So basically hoovering up all these sort of lonely, happened to be women, which is really sad. So we'll tell you what we're going to do in this episode. We're going to tell you about Fred and Rose's upbringings, which are a house of horrors in themselves. Mm.
So Frederick Walter Stephen West, who was born on the 29th of September 1941 in Much Markle in Herefordshire, which is, if you Google it, a very picturesque little village.
Yeah, it's a weird name though, Much Markle.
Yeah.
You say it twice and you're like, I feel like I've broken my mouth.
Don't say it three times.
Oh, yeah. Because Rose will appear with a moustache. I'm Welsh, but I was born in Gloucester. Okay. So this is...
Explains a lot.
Bit local. Bit local for me. In fact, did I tell you? I'm sure I've told this story on the podcast before, so sorry if I have. I was emceeing a gig in Ramsbottom. This guy was on stage, he was like, so I'm from Gloucester. And he went, which is famous for, and sort of like waved a hand at the audience. And I was trying to help him, so I went, Fred and Rose! And he went, no cheese. And just like did his bit about cheese with a real fucking atmosphere hanging in the room. I was like, I thought that's what everyone would think. Oh, who thinks of fucking cheese?
I was gigging in Swansea this week, which is so far away, as we know. And on the way there, though, you sort of go through, you see signs for like Hereford, Ledbury. Yeah. It's like, podcast coming up. Let's see these places. Fred, though, was the first surviving child. What a depressing sentence.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Next to first wanted child. Ugh. There's like this grimmest sense.
The much wanted child. First family child of Walter Stephen West. He was born on the 5th of July 1914. He died in 1992. Now, he's called... So we've got Frederick Walter Stephen West. We've got Walter Stephen West. Apparently, he could only have one of three names in those days. Like, that was it. It's like the North Korea version of... It's like their version of the haircut. Pick one. Pick all of these three names. And the mother, Daisy Hannah Hill, which is a nice name. Mm. She was born on the 20th of May 1922. She died in the 6th of February 1968. She was described as a squat gapped tooth woman.
Squat is one of the most just horribly descriptive. Like,
rude, isn't it?
I think it's never nice, is it? Like, I don't know, like. Cuddly, quite, but squat is, it sounds horrible.
Yeah.
And it sounds like as wide as she is tall, like a chode of a woman.
And if you do, you can see pictures of these people online, should you wish to. If you look at Fred's mother, Daisy, it looks like Fred doing his version of Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Yeah, it does.
The likeness is so striking, and it's uncanny, actually. But she was Walter's second wife, because Walter had been married before to a woman called Gertrude.
Right.
And who was a lot older than he was. So he'd been married to Gertrude Maddox. He was 23 at the time, Walter. She was 45 and a spinster. So they got married and...
Spinster, another horrible word.
She was a squat spinster.
No!
A gap-toothed squat. They got married, and they married for 2 years. By all accounts, very happy. They'd adopted a one-year-old, because she couldn't have children. They adopted a one-year-old child called Bruce from a local orphanage. But then something really strange happens, and you didn't believe me when I said this. No. You thought I was making this up. Gertrude was out hanging and washing up, washing out, one sunny afternoon. And when they came back, she was dead, because she'd been stung by a bee and had an allergic reaction and died. Which is very... My girl.
Yeah.
My girl. And then Walter realised that he couldn't care for the child. This is horrible. So he goes back to the orphanage, poor old Bruce.
That's utter shit, isn't it? To be like, you're getting a new home, like Annie, but then be like, actually, I can't deal with it. Not only do you lose your new mum, you then go, she was sort of sending you back. Although, thank heaven for small mercies, because it sounds like Walter was a piece of shit.
Yeah, anyway. It doesn't sound like you would have had the best life. But apparently... Walter always spoke very fondly of Gertrude, and he obviously was sad when she died. But it didn't take him long.
No.
A bit like Paul McCartney, when Linda died. Let's never forget that. He met Daisy, obviously Fred's mother, at the Much Markle Fair, which sounds delightful.
It sounds so tranquil, doesn't it?
But there's a bit of Morris dancing.
Yeah.
Bit of a coconut shy. Yeah. That was one of them.
Stoning the only black guy in the village to death.
Yeah, there were loads of that. Now, these were farm workers as well, and they were a very, very poor family. So Walter as well was a disciplinarian, as we would expect in these cases, and Daisy was overprotective. Now, they were living in a cottage that was attached to the farm that they all worked on. There was no heat or electricity, and it was a hard life.
Yeah.
Very hard life, I imagine.
It sounds like that he was sort of raised in 1864.
Yeah.
Like his sounds like they were quite... Like, yeah, no heating, that proper tin bath stuff, which by then was starting to phase its way out, but not there. And his dad used to sort of teach him things on the farm.
Hmm.
But not normal things.
Not normal things.
Like, how to fuck animals. Now, I'm a farmer's daughter and also was born in Gloucester, so I feel like I am a fairly good comparison of how things can hopefully go right. So I was taught... I mean,
you've got a lot of pets, mate.
I have got a lot of pets, not for very long.
They all look really frightened.
But it's just weird. So, like, you do get taught weird things. Mm-hmm. And it is a different way of life. Like, I remember seeing my parents doing, like, minor surgery on sheep, like... That they'd been bitten by snakes, so they had these huge lumps on their faces.
Ugh.
And my mum, like, doing, like, an operation where she would cut it open, get all the pus out, which came out like toothpaste, and then irrigating the wound and then stitching it up again. I remember watching this when I was, like, six. I remember...
That's why you like squeezing spots.
Maybe, yeah. Oh, well, what do you think I like out of the next one I'm going to tell you? I also remember when sheep would feel like they're ready to push and they would... Or they'd... thought they had another lamb in them, but they'd prolapse, they'd basically turn themselves inside out, and then you could fix it, you could kind of like push it in and hold it up in with baling twine that went around hay bales, and I was sort of like taught how to do that. Have I told you about when you have a lamb that dies and you've got another lamb that's, say a sheep's had four and it can only look after three, you get one of them, you cut the skin off the dead lamb, you put it on the live lamb as a little jacket, and then you bring it over to the mum of the dead lamb and she smells it and goes, oh yeah, that's mine, licks it, takes care of it, and has bonded with it by the time it hulks its way out of the other one's skin. It's pretty brutal, even on a nice farm.
I haven't had my breakfast yet, mate.
Sorry.
Sick.
You're not gonna need it now, are you?
For someone who does a podcast about this, I'm really squeamish. Yeah, like, but it's wearing a dead lamb.
I know, yeah, but the problem is I don't think all this stuff is normal because I've not known any different.
Yeah, and I've lived in a city all my life, so this is so far removed from anything.
I've tried to do, like, observational material on stage. You'd be like, you know when you've got the lambs and people are like, no, and it just sounds sort of, like, horrific.
Hey, guys, you know what it's like when a sheep prolapses?
Yeah, yeah, give me a cheer if you fixed a prolapse with some string. Okay, give me a cheer if you're drinking. But my dad was quite like, my dad's quite disciplinarian, and he was quite a sort of scary, is a scary figure. Well, not these days, but I remember because our drive down to the farm is half a mile long. It's just like a long, like really shitty lane. And the Jehovah's two times made it all the way up there, and then he set the dogs on them, and then they ran the other half mile back down.
That's brilliant.
No, it's not.
I think it's really funny.
Taking time out of his busy schedule of kicking the heads off cockerels chase Jehovah's Witnesses away. But like, so my dad, I think, is from a different age. But when I hear about Fred West's dad, it's absolutely insane. It's like something from Victorian times. Like, they'd be doing needlework and pressing flowers.
Yeah, I can imagine you upstairs like, oh, what's all that noise outside? I'm just finishing my needlework. God.
Pressing flowers I used to do, though.
It's nice that. I really like that. I actually got a flower press. Oh, I know, you wouldn't think, but that's, I have.
No, I had just heavy books. And then it's quite nice when you open them and they fall out and you're like, oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah, it's really charming that, like, a really old book and you get it and you're like, oh, that's really sweet.
I had a reverse of that, the reverse charming of, I was reading a book about Audrey Hepburn. Again, sorry if I've said this already. And I was reading it, it's an autobiography or biography, and I turned one page, and then about 25, 30 little pictures of her cut out of magazines, like the Radio Times and things, just fluttered down onto my lap. And I was like, oh no, I found, this is like someone's trophy thing. Just felt really weird. I was like, I couldn't read the rest of the book. I was like, this is too creepy.
I think in, probably when I'm dead, someone will be looking through my stuff and just find loads of pictures of Liam Gallagher and Oasis tucked away. And
really?
Yeah, that's the thing. I've got boxes of paper clippings
in my loft
going all the way back to, like, 95. Yeah, this is the kind of person I am.
I didn't think you were like
seriously.
That.
Seriously.
I feel very... I'm not sure this podcast's got much life in it
I've got loads.
Isn't it weird that I've just talked about prolapsing and fixing it with string and Rachel's the weird one for keeping some paper clippings?
Well, my intention was to... I call it my archive. My intention, making it weirder.
Yeah, you really are. That's like people who are hoarders and then they've always got stacks of newspapers and they're like, what are these for? And they're like, I'm making an archive. I'm going to put it on the internet. I'm like, I think you find that already exists.
On the off chance that any members of Oasis, past or present, are listening to this, I'm not weird. I do just want you to be my best friend.
I just want you inside me.
I just want to keep you in my... No, I don't. No. But the weirdest one I had was I was reading a book... bought this second-hand book, The True Adventures of the Rolling Stones. I was like, oh, brilliant, this is going to be great. And I read a bit of it, and I sort of, you know, as you open it, and do you know what fell out? A pube and a tissue.
Oh, no! What colour was the pube?
Sort of a goldy brown colour. Possibly could have been ginger.
Classic. That is a classic British male coloured pube, I'd say that.
When it fell out, I was like, oh, this is going to be a good read. But now I feel a bit sick, yeah. Pube and tissue.
That, like, goldeny brown kind of ginger is classic male British man ginger pube, I reckon.
It is a classic.
Unless it was so old, it was sun damaged. You know, like when you have in a shop when there's one shoe in the window and they sell it off cheaper because it's faded in the sun.
Faded pubes. That's horrible. It sounds like a great name for a band.
Faded pubes. Our friend Lou Conran, she's brilliant. She went to drama school and she always says, yeah, I paid £7,000 a turn to lie on the floor and blow other people's pubes away from me. Doing like those exercises. But I swear to God, I've done that same kind of thing in like drama classes. And there's, when you get on a floor, a lino floor, you realise how, it's basically like a shag carpet of pubes. So many pubes. I don't know where they come from.
I think they must fall down your trouser leg.
Do you think?
Yeah, I reckon.
Surely your pants catch them.
Well, if you're... I don't know. I mean, obviously, I've never been a guy, but imagine if you're wearing trousers and those boxer shorts that aren't very tight.
Oh, yeah.
If you sort of, you know, maybe move a bit.
But, I mean, I think a combination of those two things is quite rare. It doesn't... I think there's some people who've got a thing about leaving their pubes in rooms.
If anyone knows the answer to this, please do tweet us.
I remembered lying down on a lino floor and seeing just all these pubes, and I was like, oh my God, like that. And I nearly inhaled one, like one touched my lip, and I was like, right, I'm going to leave this class. I can't pretend to be a crisp packet anymore.
Oh God, this is a stomach-turning one. We've not even spoke about any murders yet.
So they were very poor.
They were very, very poor. But they were... The dad, obviously, whilst was working on the farm as a labourer, and they moved to their second home, Moorcourt Cottage, 2 years after Fred. So Fred was the first surviving child, as you know. Now, they're a very, very close family.
Yeah.
Very close. And by 1951, Daisy had given birth to 8 children. six had survived.
And this is all in 10 years. Yeah. So she's banging them out. Which sounds awful. It just sounds like being a cat or something.
Yeah, I know. Fred always was his mother's favourite, though. And if you see pictures of him when he was small, he had blonde hair, blue eyes.
Oh, he's gorgeous.
Actually, he's cute little kid. Very cute. Yeah. I mean, if we didn't know what we know now, you'd be like, yeah, he's adorable. A lot of people used to say that he was a gypsy.
Yeah, we'll or say traveller. They would say gypsy. See, I don't know the politics of whether gypsy is a bad word. I think it's one of those words that was fine and then bad people used it in bad ways. Just like Paki used to be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, oh, I'm going to have to beat that out.
You better have to beat that out, mate, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I'm using it in context. On Radio 4, you're allowed to swear as long as it's in context.
Well,
I'm treating this like it's Radio 4 all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, Australia, they do use that word.
And it's not. Oh, that's interesting.
One of my ex-boyfriends, as we know, was an Australian, and he said when he moved to his country, apparently he was talking about the cricket, and he said, instead of Pakistanis, he said the...
Oh, right.
And everyone was like, are you for real, mate? And he was like, I'm really sorry, I didn't realise. He
Mad.
Didn't know.
Yeah, I guess you wouldn't know if it's a fine word.
Because in Australia, he's short and everything, don't they?
Yeah, like, rangers.
You, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. And he said it's just quite common to just use that word and not think about it.
I think someone's got a good bit about how, I think it's Sully O'Sullivan, about he's from New Zealand and he's like, the word Paki wasn't offensive until you guys started putting the word fucking
on it.
Which is how, like, I remember hearing a thing a little while ago where in the Blighton books there was the word gypsy in it and they wanted to reissue them where they changed it to traveller or Romany gypsy or whatever, you know, so made it, like, give him more context or... And this woman was like, oh, it's appalling, it's not pejorative. The word gypsy is not pejorative. And I think they had, like, a representative from the traveller community, and it was like, well, in this instance, they put the word dirty in front of it. So in this instance, it is.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll say traveller.
So he had the look of a traveller about
him. And he was a classic mummy's boy. Absolute classic. He didn't have many friends apart from his siblings, which is weird.
I never trust anyone who knocks around with their brothers and sisters.
Yeah, like your sister. My sister, for example, is not my mate, right? I can count on, like, one hand the amount of times I've been in a social environment with her. I've been in the pub with her three times in my life, and that twice was because I bumped into her. and we're just being polite, like...
I thought it would be like a wake or something.
No, nothing like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, she's all right and that, and she's quite amusing, but we're not like, oh, let's go out together, let's go and do something.
I think it's weird. I mean, I get on really well with my brothers, both of them. Yeah, I get on really well with them, but I wouldn't, we would never all go out on the piss.
Yeah,
my brothers went on holiday with their friends once together, but they're like 2 years apart, whereas that's quite a big gap. But I never trust people who just, like, when you're like, are you coming out? You're like, no, me and my brothers and sisters are going bowling. And you're like, oh, all right. And then you're going to, what, fuck each other.
You're like the Waltons, but weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It is weird.
I think as well, people, and I'm sorry if I'm going to offend anyone with this, but I'm going to say it.
It's not going to be the most offensive thing that's heard.
No, that's
very
true. People who drink with their parents. It's like the
weird.
Most, it's the most working class thing, and it's the most middle class thing, and it's not even in between. Like, it's one or the other. Like, nobody in between. I mean, I consider myself upper working class, obviously. but I just think, I mean, my mum doesn't drink anyway. My dad goes to the pub. I love a drink. But I just wouldn't combine the two. I would never go to my parents. Do you want to go down the boozer?
Yeah. I might have been drunk in front of my parents when I was a teenager, and I've seen my mum tipsy. My dad doesn't really drink anymore. He used to drink competitively, but doesn't anymore. And, maybe see mum a little bit tipsy, but I would never get drunk with them. That feels weird. I've got a friend who does all the time. They get hammered, and then they have huge arguments over, like, long-standing things. And they have a rule, which is no post-mortems.
Oh, God.
Which is, like, you don't... Whatever you say at night, you don't talk about in the morning.
That's a bit like, keep a lid on it until 5 years down the line and then just explode about it and just list everything that you...
Get hammered when I'm getting married and it all comes out in the speech. Yeah, that's what weird. It is. It's fucking weird. Sorry if you...
Yeah, sorry if you do that. I mean, we find it strange, but...
I've never seen my dad drunk.
I've seen my dad after a couple of pints when he's been to the pub. Because he doesn't drink in the house either.
I think I'd hate it. I mean, he's enough of a liability sober... In between saying anything racist that he can to wind me up and saying he's going to die. I cannot imagine what he's like once he's got some... Apparently my mum said he used to drink a lot of gin, him and his mate. They played Monopoly for like 3 days straight and drink gin. And she, and that's what his drink of choice was. And she said, I can't deal with your father when he drinks, because apparently he would be like, oh, I'm a bad father. And he gets like really sad and morose when he has gin.
But still carries on playing Monopoly.
Yeah, still plays Monopoly. Well, fucking... capital is in the board game, isn't it? It's enough to take it out of anyone.
Go straight to jail. Oh, I don't believe it.
Don't give me a chance. I don't deserve it.
I'm going to prison for being a bad father.
And I'm the boot. Who wants to be the boot?
I'm always a top hat.
I'm always a top hat. Or the dog, and I pretend to wee on people as I pass them. It's the little things.
Now, all the kids in the family were expected to help on the farm. I'm sure you were expected to when you were younger. All expected to help. They received a bit of pocket money for chores that they did. Now, Daisy didn't help in many ways because Fred didn't really have any friends. He wasn't particularly good at school either. He wasn't particularly interested or massively intelligent. But Daisy would also go down to the school if he was being picked on and bollock the teachers and other children, which is never helpful.
No. So he used to go to school and, yeah, he'd get told off by a teacher, and there's a few occasions where Daisy went in and was like, don't you dare talk to my Fred like that! And then she came in and apparently she was a bit of a, what did they say? She's a bit of a sort of eccentrically dressed and very overweight. And kids are mean, aren't they?
Yeah.
So they would make fun of Fred even more. And it just sounds like, you know... It just sounds like she's made a real pressure cooker of bullying for him.
Yeah. All the farm work that they did do, though, gave Fred a very good work ethic.
Yeah.
Because he was... Fair. I mean, what he's done, all these awful crimes, he still held down a job.
Yeah.
But he didn't pay tax, though, but we'll leave that. And he was...
No one paid tax then.
Yeah, that's true. He was also a petty thief, because his father used to say, do what you want, just don't get caught doing it.
And I think he really took that on board. I mean, ultimately, he did get caught, but he apparently got very sexually aggressive when he was about 16 as well. He was, like, ultra, like, I don't know. It's not even a high sex drive. It's something else, isn't it?
Hypersexual? I mean, I'm no psychologist.
That sounds too cool.
Hey, I'm hypersexual.
Dog with two dicks, let's say that.
It's not like Prince would call an album hypersexual.
Yeah.
Something. There would might have, be one.
Past tense.
Yeah, sorry. Keep forgetting.
Yeah, he's like a dog with two dicks.
Yeah.
In fact, someone sent me a picture the other day of a man with two dicks. Lou Conran, same woman again. Of course it is Lou. And it, apparently, his dad used to have sex with his daughters.
Yeah.
And he used to say, I made you, I'm entitled to you.
Which is actually something that Fred, as we go later on, he says very similar things to his own children, which will...
It's what I say to my pot noodles after a while, but...
I've made you. I'm in fact.
No. I'm drinking the juice afterwards.
Now, we'll say this as well. The classmates did say when he was at school he was scruffy, dim and lethargic. I feel like that all the time. He was regularly in trouble and he left school in 1956 at 15 and became an unskilled labourer. And as we've mentioned, he had interest in sex at a very young age. He claimed that Daisy, his mother, obviously, introduced him to sex aged 12.
Jesus.
He used to share a bed with her when he was very young. And then when he got to about 12, she said, oh, come back and sleep in my bed. And things apparently happened. Fred's brother, Doug, who is still alive and about to this day, he's dismissed these claims, including the claim that Fred was introduced to bestiality by his father. He says it was Fred's... It was complete fantasy. Yeah. None of this went on.
But he was a bit of a liar, wasn't he, Fred?
Massive liar.
So it's but then
if you think Kyle Panzram was a bullshitter,
yeah,
wait till you hear this stuff.
Well, I think he was a liar, but I also think his crimes and behaviour are consistent with someone who was sexually assaulted as a child.
Yeah,
the fact that he assaulted his own kids, the fact that he went on to kill people, those are all. I'm not saying that everyone who is assaulted as a child goes on to do those things,
yeah.
But they're like hallmarks. That's part of the serial killer bingo. So. I would not be surprised. Yeah.
And also, I mean, if something so terrible has happened in your family, like all these incidents, you're going to want to distance. You're going to want to say, well, no.
Damage control, aren't you? Like, yeah, we were not like... And also, it could just have been that there has been occasions where a sibling has been abused and the other sibling had no idea.
Yeah.
And Fred was the favourite and, you know...
Because
about 16, because he was described as also quite simian looking and he had these sort of... teeth that he got from his mum are quite big gaps in it. And it, but at 16, he sort of tarted himself up because he had this lovely thick hair, but it was really unkempt. And he started to go, right, if I make an effort, because apparently he was always, his teeth were rotten.
Yeah, never used to brush his teeth.
Never used to brush his teeth. He was like, if I brush my teeth and do my hair, more women are going to... And for a while, he was, everyone was like, ooh, Freddie.
Yeah, for a while, he was quite the village heartthrob.
Yeah.
There was an interview in one of the books with a woman whose sort of sisters went to school with him. And they said, oh yeah, all the talk was just about, like, Fred. Oh, Fred. Like, they were at a different school, actually, in Ledbury. And he used to go to Ledbury every weekend to hang around with the other teenagers. And they would be like, oh, Fred, yeah. Oh, Fred West. Ooh.
And then about 20 years later, they're like, oh, Fred West, did you hear about that? Yeah. Fred West. But at 17, he had a motorcycle accident. And I think this is really important to his timeline.
Yes. He bought a 125cc James motorcycle, which means absolutely nothing to me. If you Google...
It's not that powerful.
Is it not?
No.
How do you know about motorbikes?
Mate, my brothers were schoolboy scrambling champions. I used to get taken to school on a motorbike.
Bloody revelations left, right and centre.
Oh, God.
Sick of this. Now, this motorcycle, he'd saved up and bought it. He was very proud of it. There's a picture of him, actually. It's quite a charming picture of him and his sisters sitting on the motorbike. Quite a nice picture, if you don't know the backstory. Now, he had the motorbike for 2 months, and on the 28th of November, when he was 17, he crashed on a country road into Pat Manns, who was a girl from the village. She was cycling. She was only slightly hurt, which is incredible. Now, he was in a coma for several days after this, and when he came round, he had to walk with calipers. He developed a phobia of hospitals.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he started having sudden fits of rage. And apparently people said it altered his looks as well.
Yeah, well, he got a metal plate put in his head. And I can't believe that they still do that now. I feel like there must be a better system. We've got 3D printers now. But they had a metal plate put in his head. And he's got this leg that's shorter than the other.
Yeah.
And oh, do you know what I love? I love a built-up shoe.
You the Spice Girls.
I do. I think they look fucking cool. Really? And I imagine that if I was forced to have one constantly, I might feel differently. But I just think they look fucking mint. I saw one at the doctor's the other day when I was sat outside. I really...
Where'd you get your shoes from?
Yeah. But do you know what I always wonder? When you see someone with a built-up shoe, but it's a brand name one, like Reebok Classics, and you've got one big foamy bit. And I'm like, what? Reebok surely don't sell them, or is there a company that adapts them?
There must be. I mean, we'll look into this.
We won't. We'll forget as soon as we leave.
I will.
All right.
I think there must be.
I think they look great. I mean, like I say, I understand that if you were born with it, you probably might not find it a gift, but I think they look cool.
You like the look of them?
Yeah, I think it makes you look like you've got a story.
They do seem quite light, don't they, as well? Yeah. Like the look of them. Yeah. Like you've got a story. What happened to you? All right, don't ask.
Yeah. he had this, he's got one leg short than the other, he's got a plate in his head, and apparently he's lost control of his emotions.
And he's also banged the frontal lobe.
Ba ba ba. Which is. Take that off your bingo.
Yeah, this is a big, big thing. But it doesn't just happen once, the injury to this frontal lobe. Which actually sounds like I'm describing a penis, doesn't it? Part of the brain. 2 years later, he's at Ledbury Youth Club, being a bit grabby, as per usual. In fact, this has been exacerbated by this injury, and he does get even more sort of... his sense of entitlement to women gets a bit worse. And he's at Ledbury Youth Club, and he grabbed a girl who was not interested, and she punched him, good, and he fell down the fire escape. I think it was something like 3 flights. And again,
Jesus.
Banged his frontal lobe, knocked him out, and then...
Serves him right.
It does serve him right.
Shouldn't have put his hand up a stranger's skirt.
Exactly.
And then he starts to get into like petty crime then. So in about 1961, he got done for stealing a watch strap and a cigarette case, which is such a weird thing to steal, isn't it?
It is quite... Yeah.
Like, but you don't steal, like, a cigarette case. Because he doesn't brush his teeth. He's not going to look chic getting out a cigarette case. That's going to look odd, like seeing a cat in a jacket.
But he does smoke and tell the time.
Well, I don't know if he can tell the time. He left school very early, didn't he? So he got caught and fined. And the same year, he gets, apparently, a 13-year-old pregnant.
Oh. Now this...
Not just any 13-year-old.
Yeah, this was his sister, who had been abusing since 1960, by all accounts. But in 1960, we must mention as well, this is his first meeting with Rena.
Oh, yes, yes,
they
yes.
They are at a dance at the Memorial Hall in Much Markle. And Catherine Costello, known as Rena, who is quite important to the story, she meets Fred. She's Scottish. She's from Glasgow. She's been visiting relatives in England. And they dated for several months until she decided to end it and go back to Scotland. And this is where he, as well, starts to be petty. His petty crime sort of takes off. And this is where it comes out that he's been abusing his sister since 1960. They only found out about this because Kitty, his sister, lovely name.
It's a lovely name, yeah. But you can't touch that now, can you? Same as Myra. Ugh.
She told Daisy that she was pregnant. And Daisy was disgusted by this and reported Fred to the police and he was arrested. And Fred's reaction to this, he said, well, doesn't everyone do it? No, actually, Fred, they don't.
I'm gonna suggest here, I think Daisy was jealous.
Yeah, I did think that myself.
I think because Fred was her favourite. Fred was the one that she apparently, allegedly, had sort of a relationship with. And I think when she found out that the daughter, the younger model, was pregnant, I think she was jealous and that's why she reported him.
Yeah, I do. I think if these things were definitely going on, that there's definitely a case of...
Yeah. So the family kicked him out. He went to work on a series of building sites, got caught stealing. Did it go to trial?
Yeah, well, Daisy was prepared to testify as a defence for Fred, but despite being furious and angry. And then eventually Kitty refused to give evidence and the trial collapsed. So I think there was probably a bit of, maybe Kitty was asked not to, maybe. But on the 9th of November 1961, this is when this all happened, he was charged with sexual abuse of a 13-year-old girl, but then obviously the trial collapsed because Kitty didn't want to say anything. And I don't think she had the baby, as far as I know.
To be honest, I think that even if she had it, that they would have tried to put a super injunction on it.
Yeah, there would have been.
Like there is on... There's only two super injunctions. Four super injunctions to do with serial killers. Two of them are about women, and one of them is Maxine Carr, who technically wasn't a killer. She just gave a false alibi, but not that I'm defending her. Her child... doesn't know that she's Maxine Carr.
He doesn't really say what happened to the child. I don't think...
Who knows?
No, who knows?
Well, because he also had a fucking horrible little habit, didn't he? Do you remember he used to run a side trade when he was older?
Oh, now this is pretty grim, everyone. It's pretty stomach-turning. It's too early for this. He used to claim that he could perform abortions, and this was his brag.
What a fucking weird brag. Yeah.
This was his brag.
I can hold a pint glass between my tits.
Yeah, that's...
And I'm backwards about coming forwards about that.
But he was like, if you know any girls who got into trouble, you send them to me, sort them out.
That is the grimmest thing in the world. It's like a Frankie Boyle joke, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having a backstreet abortion performed by Fred West. It's like the punchline to a horrible joke.
It's in it. It's horrible. But there's actually, as the case progresses, police actually found... photographic, possibly evidence that he was doing this. So he had, when he was at Cromwell Street, he had instruments and various tools, and girls were coming and going from the house. So it's absolutely disgusting. But this is one of the claims that he had. When he was he went to live with his aunt when he was banished from the home. They still weren't happy with him. He went to live with his Aunt Violet.
Yeah.
But then in 1962, everyone had a change of heart and he moved back in.
Yeah. He moved back in. He also took up with Rena again, who'd come back. She was... He picked her up on the side of the road and she was pregnant and she was really worried that the police were going to do her for being pregnant. It was a very weird thing. In his words, he was like, she was panicking that people were going to judge her and that the police should get in trouble with the police and social services for being pregnant. So he said, well, why don't you say that I'm going to marry you if the police pull us over? She was like, okay. And they got married.
Mm-hmm.
So she was pregnant to an Asian bus driver.
Yeah. She was working for a bus company for a short time in Glasgow. So this is where this liaison happened. She had convictions for burglary and prostitution as well.
Yeah, by the time she was a teenager, poor love.
Horrible. And they got married in Ledbury, and the only guest was Fred's brother, John West, inventor of the tuna lunch. John West, tuna, yeah. There's pictures of the wedding as well. They're on the old, you can Google image those, should you wish to. They moved then to Lanarkshire, where Fred became an ice cream van driver. Which is like, they just don't want an ice cream off him.
Yeah. If he doesn't brush his teeth, what's he doing with his hands?
Oh, God.
So Charmaine was the girl, and yeah, she was born. Now, what they said is, because she was obviously a different colour to mum and dad, they told people that the baby she was pregnant with died, so they adopted Charmaine.
Yeah.
But Charmaine would have looked like Rena. Quite possibly. At least half like her.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been, probably would have been some likeness, you would
imagine.
She's
a very cute little girl in pictures.
Yeah, she was born on 22nd of March 1963. And it's just really, as we go along, it's just really sad. What a sad life that kid had. July 1964, Anna Marie was born. So Fred and Rena's first child together. The neighbours that lived around at the time said that Rena was a nice young woman and that she the roles very well turned out, and she was trying to do the best to bring her kids up. In the meantime, Fred is driving this ice cream van, and there's an incident, which we'll come to in a moment, with the ice cream van. And apparently he was very, very harsh with the children. He had them, this is just weird, he had them, when they were in bed, he would cage them in with metal bars. So effectively, they were like in a cage in bed, and they couldn't get out. And they couldn't move. Yeah, he just used to apparently used to hit them. He was quite aggressive with them. But then they also come into contact with a couple of people, with Anna McFaul, who comes into the story.
And this is 1964. Now, in this time, Fred's got kind of developed a weird interest in. Apparently, he had no interest in normal sex. He only wanted, and this is I quote, oral sex, bondage, and sodomy. And I don't think that's... I mean, it's not... I think that's sort of fairly normal, isn't it? It's fairly vanilla. It's not the weirdest things.
Well, I suppose... Yeah, I mean...
How's oral sex out of the norm? It's not, is it?
No.
And apparently, yeah, he wants his sodomy all hours of the day. Now, I think that's... I think there is a time of day that's suitable for bumming.
I would say between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m.
That's optimum bumming
That's
time.
That's fine.
But not all... I can't... I'm not getting bummed at 9 o'clock in the morning. I'll lay that down the groundwork there.
Just got yourself a brew.
Yeah.
And the next thing, you just...
Yeah, and also, if he's not brushing his teeth, they'd be like, get away. I know you're behind me, but I can still smell it.
If his teeth stink, what do his bits smell like, mate? He's going to stink. The whole lot of him's going to stink. But, yeah, he did have, like, this bizarre sexual appetite, and it was all hours of the day, and it was whenever he wanted as well. So it wasn't a case of, shall we? It was like, you're going to have sex with me. That's it. So he was very aggressive. When he was working on the ice cream van, you could say this is first murder, but I do actually think this was an accident. He was cleared of this as well. He ran over and killed a 5-year-old boy. I think it was a case of he couldn't see him out the window, and it was just a horrible accident. Now, after this, he was cleared of any sort of wrongdoing, and apparently it was just a tragic accident. He left that job and got a job in an abattoir in Gloucester. So he fled to Gloucester because a lot of the people around at the time blamed Fred for the accident and weren't very happy about it.
Yeah,
and he says, oh, I was drove out by like the local gangsters, which probably isn't true because he was a fantasist. But people clearly were pissed off. And he moved back to Gloucester. But he brought with him Issa McNeil, who was a friend of theirs, and Anne McFaul, who moved in with him. Rena didn't go. She stayed.
Because they had a very tumultuous relationship. He was regularly unfaithful, but he was really possessive of Rena and Charmaine. And this Anna McFaul, I mean, she was quite vulnerable because when they met Fred, her boyfriend had just died.
And Anna McFaul was obsessed with him by this point. She really had a bit of a thing for Fred. She thought it was hot stuff.
They think that this abattoir started off his fantasies to do with dismemberment and butchery, because apparently that's when he started to get sort of into that kind of thing.
Mm.
And his sexual perversions, oral sex, got worse and worse. What they count as sexual perversions, I don't think are perversions. Like, oh, he kept his socks on when they're having sex.
Yeah, they're a bit sort of, they're not as...
No, but his marriage was unstable. Rena moves back to Glasgow. She goes without the kids, and then she comes back because she misses the kids too much.
The van as well, I'll just slip this in here. The van that he was driving when he worked at the abattoir.
You sound like Fred West.
I'm just going to slip this in here. The van that he was driving, this makes me feel sick, when he was working at the abattoir, was filthy, apparently, and was just covered in... He would come home covered in bits of meat and... blood and just not get changed.
That's horrible. My brother used to work as a meat hygiene inspector. Again, I've probably said this before. Which is when, you know, when you see a bit of lamb and it's got a stamp on it, mm-hmm. someone has to say that this has been clean and look, he had one of those. He used to wear white wellies and a hairnet. Ooh. And so he worked in abattoirs and he would shower and everything, but he'd still come home and he would still smell like a steak.
Oh.
But like he, you know, because you have blood under your finger, that all sorts, but he would, it's so hard to keep yourself clean, but if you're not making the effort, he must have fucking stunk.
Oh, God.
Have you heard as well about this thing about how he used to eat onions as if it was an apple?
Mate, this is the fact that I slip any first date I've been on, I've slipped that fact in. Ah! And if they're still there when I've been for a wee, I think, yeah, you're the man for me.
The League of Gentlemen reference it as well in the...
Oh, do they?
You know that, I don't know if you remember, I think it's in the third series, there's a weird guy who's like, excuse me, can I... Have you got time for a survey? And then he says, like, can I pinch your nipple? It's Mark Gatiss who plays, it's got time. And he said, would you be able to eat an onion as if it were an apple? And that line appears in a few other things. I mean, they've got a lot of serial killer references in their stuff.
Do.
God, if you're American, you've not seen The League of Gentlemen, it's fucking brilliant. You should watch it. If you're British and you've not seen it, get out.
Yeah, what's up?
Send them back.
But he did used to, yeah, he sort of, he also used to, well, this is when he's with Rose, actually. He used to go through the bins. And any food that had just been sort of thrown away, he would just eat out of the bin.
He's a freegan.
As well, we must say, Rena started visiting frequently. Rena began to resent Anna because she could see that they're quite a close relationship.
Well, yeah, she turned up and they were fucking shacked up together.
Yep. She was trying to get Fred to divorce Rena and marry her.
But Rena tried to get the kids off him. She told Hazel Savage, I think it was a constable or superintendent, that he was a sexual pervert and that the kids couldn't be around him.
Well, he was abusing the girls as well, quite openly. And Charmaine was getting this worse than Anne-Marie.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't Fred's child. He did treat her differently.
Yeah. Poor kid.
He did sort of openly abuse them. Like, he'd be rubbing them against his crotch when people were... Just really, really horrible, horrible things. Anna McFall became pregnant, though.
Yeah, but just during this time, there were 8 unsolved sexual assaults in that area committed by a guy who fitted his description. So I just think he was out doing whatever the fuck he liked. Getting, like, fucking women, like... Fiddling with kids, doing, like, I think he's raping women.
Nobody's checking.
No one's checking. And so, yeah, 1967, she gets pregnant.
And she goes missing.
She goes missing. Now, Fred's first story is that he came home to his trailer and Rena was there with her pimp and a suitcase. And he said, where's my Anna? And they said, she's in the suitcase. She went to stab me, so we stabbed her back. And now she's dead, and I'm going to take her to the tip. And he was like, you know, you're not taking my Anna to the tip. I'm going to go bury her in our special place. Mm. But this doesn't add up, because if that was the case...
Yeah. A few years, well, many years down the line, Anna's body was found on the edge of a field in Gloucester, not far from Uchmarkle. She was dismembered. She'd clearly been restrained before the murder because of various things that were found on the skeleton. The fetus had been cut from her womb. And, trademark, Fred West, kneecaps, fingers missing.
Yeah, fingers, toes, kneecaps.
Yeah.
Which is the saddest version of that kid's song.
And Anne McFall was never reported missing either, which is really sad.
Oh.
So, her and this unborn child, just... And also, it's bad enough that he's killed... This woman, bad enough that the woman he's killed is pregnant, but then to dismember her and then cut the child.
That's fucking. It's insane.
It's sickening, it's, really.
It's just, yeah. So Rena moved back in.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Rena had anything to do with this murder.
No, I don't
or
think
her pimp or whatever. She moved back in, and he would send her out on the game to get money for them. He's doing all these backstreet abortions. Such a weird brag. Such a weird brag.
And Rena, by this point, has had enough of him, and she leaves again. And then the kids are in and out of care.
Yeah. So January 1968, as well, this 15-year-old, Mary Bathholm, she's at a bus stop in Gloucester. Don't go to bus stops.
Yeah, yet again.
She's with a Monopoly set on her way to a boyfriend. She goes missing. She's abducted. This is in Gloucester. There's just a few pieces of the Monopoly set just left.
Oh, that's creepy, that, isn't it?
Yeah, not the top hat, of course. Everyone wants the top hat.
Oh, yeah, that's giving me the...
They never found out who took her, but Fred became a suspect once all these crimes came out. And there was connections. So he was a customer at the Pop Inn, which is, I think, a cafe, but it sounds like a brothel. Yeah. And Mary would regularly serve him and bring in his cups of tea. He also did work on the building she was working at. Like, the building behind where she worked, he did work on. He used to come in. A girl fitting Mary's description was seen with Anna McFall. One witness even saw Mary in Fred's van. So I think he killed her as well.
Without a doubt, he had something to do with this. I mean, yeah, without a doubt. It's the coincidences are too...
Yeah.
Fred actually opened his own cafe a few years later.
Why do these people insist on being around food?
It was called something like the Blue Lamp, but he wanted to call it the Come and Get It.
Oh, God, he's awful.
I do not want your sausages, Fred West.
No, I don't want to come and get anything from you. Daisy, his mum, dies complications.
Was she having an operation?
Gallbladder. She was having a gallbladder out. There were complications. She died on the operating table, which is obviously very rare. But, you know, the same thing happened with Kanye West's mum, Donda West, who he loves. If you listen to, I think it's his first two or three albums, there's a song called Mama, which is great about how much he kind of loves her. And I think Kanye West has got mental health issues.
Oh, without it, yeah.
And I think there's an element of racist bullying in the press's treatment of him.
I think somebody needs to have a word with Kanye West and go, are you all right, mate?
No one has a word with billionaires, that's the problem.
Yeah, that is.
Like, no one goes, all right, mate.
I'm the person to do that.
Yeah, do you know what? I'd fucking love to do that. I'd tell Madonna to clean up her fucking attitude as well. Don't come on 90 minutes late and shout at us, you cunt. Anyway, Kanye West had, Donda West went and got a cosmetic surgery that he paid for, and she died under the anaesthetic. So, and then since then, he's got progressively. So I think that there's some unresolved issues there. And I think that the perfect storm of abusive, sexually abusive family, frontal lobe damage, aggressive marriage, and then your mum, who's the first person you've had sexual contact, dies. I think this kicks Fred up into another gear.
Yeah, and this is where it gets even worse.
A few months later.
On the 29th of November 1968, on her 15th birthday, he met Rose.
And I think what we've decided is, this has been so long, I think we're going to have to do a three-parter. We're going to do another hour about Rose West. And then we're going to do their crimes. Who knows? I mean, the trial's not very long because topped himself. Yeah. But
oh, spoiler! You know.
Spoiler alert, he's not a good man.
Yeah.
So, yes, this has been part one.
Part one.
Let's call it part one of episode 30 of the All Killer No Filler podcast. So, yeah, we've got a Facebook page. Come and find us. Come and chat to us. Don't get weird. We'll kick you off. You can catch us in Leicester for a live show. We're going to put a load more live shows in. We're looking at a London one. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
See you back to talk about Rose West.